Right now, being young and falling in love can be a wonderful experience. Every relationship has its challenges, but if you were a gay man in the early 1980s, there was more to deal with. The realization that many men in your community were falling ill and dying from a mysterious disease. Michael Ward is the author of the recently released memoir, The Sea is Quiet Tonight. He shares both the wonderful and difficult aspects of his life with Mark Halberstadt before, during, and after Mark's diagnosis with AIDS. Michael Ward will be in Milwaukee for an event tonight and in Madison tomorrow. He joins us from our WPR studios in Milwaukee. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Can you set the scene for us? What was it like being a young gay man in the late 70s and early 1980s?
Before AIDS, it was pretty exciting because we had gone through a whole decade of what is commonly called gay liberation. We always thought of it as being a revolution. And all the contraction around shaming and homophobia seemed to have lifted to some extent, so that there was a lot of partying.
And how did you and Mark first meet?
We met on Fire Island at something called Tea Dance, which was a dance that was held every afternoon from 5 to 7 on a big boardwalk next to the ocean on Fire Island. And there were hundreds of men dancing, and I got there late, and I cut through the crowd and ran into an old friend of mine, and she introduced me to Mark.
And was it love at first sight or nearly at first sight?
Nearly at first sight. It was funny because he had a new camera and you couldn't really talk. So he shouts into my ear, "Do you want to go for a walk with me while I take some pictures?" And by the time we'd gone for a walk for an hour, he had invited me over to the place where he was staying for dinner with a whole bunch of other guys. And one thing led to another. And we were inseparable after that, really.
And even today, it can be difficult for people to come out to friends, families, and coworkers. What was it like for you back then? Less acceptance outside of that community, meeting each other's families. What kind of issues did you deal with?
Good question. I had come out to my family in 1974 when I had gotten into a consciousness-raising group, and I met Mark in 1981. My parents were very blue-collar Omaha people. My father worked in a dairy. But they were terrific with me about it. They didn't understand it. Mark's parents were much more conservative, and he refused to deal with being gay with them because his mother was so reactive to it.
Did you meet his family as a close friend?
No, he actually took me. Well, yes, he took me to meet them. There's a chapter in the book about that where he took me to meet them, and they knew perfectly well what our relationship was by then because we had been together for 8 months, and I loved his mother. He had a difficult relationship with her, but I felt very close to her from the beginning. She wanted to be close.
Not like any relationship. You had ups and downs and challenges, but can you talk about some of the high points?
Okay. Well, for me, one of the high points was his willingness to move to Boston. He had just moved from New York to Fort Lauderdale. He was moving from being a teacher to, he wanted to be a boat captain, sailing boats. And so problem was, well, there was a lot of distance between us. I had just moved to Boston and established a psychotherapy practice. And so the difficulty really was in trying to bridge the distance and find sailing work for him in Boston, which was not so easy.
Now, happy times in some ways, but this cloud kept gathering. What's your first memory of being aware of this mysterious illness that we eventually identified as HIV/AIDS?
Mark had six partners in New York with whom the group of them owned a building on 18th and Broadway, which they converted from, it had been a warehouse and a manufacturing building. And over a period of years, they converted them into lofts. And one of his partners in that building got sick and died within 2 months in 1981. And that was our first experience with knowing someone, although we had no idea what he had died from. Nobody did.
And you started seeing reports in mostly gay-oriented media. What kind of fear was starting to develop there?
Well, the fear, especially in New York and San Francisco, because that's where the first cases were, developed very rapidly because all of a sudden dozens, and you know, first it was a few, and then it was dozens, and then it was hundreds of gay men were getting sick, being hospitalized, They couldn't figure out how to diagnose them. And then they were dying. And, you know, over a period of time, all of a sudden it was massive numbers.
Tell us what led to Mark's diagnosis.
He developed shingles first. And then he developed thrush, oral thrush, both of which are things that you can develop. Certainly you don't have to have AIDS to get those things. Finally, he developed a persistent cough. And the cough got serious enough that we decided that he saw somebody to see if it was pneumonia, and it wasn't. So finally he went to see a specialist, and that's when he was diagnosed with pneumocystis.
We're talking about the early days of the AIDS and HIV epidemic in the United States. Michael Ward is with us, retired psychotherapist. His memoir is The Sea is Quiet Tonight. This quickly, not just in your life, but in the communities in San Francisco, New York, and elsewhere, became a devastating experience. I understand you have a segment to read to us. So would you, would you be able to do that, Mark?
Sure.
Mike?
This scene occurs about 6 weeks before Mark died. In early June, we hit a hard patch. Mark was tiring more easily again without the gamma interferon. I drove him down to New York City on a Friday to stay for 2 nights with close friends and to meet with his attorney. He perked up when we crossed over the Triborough Bridge into Manhattan, clearly looking forward to being away from the gloom of Boston. I dropped him off at the attorney's office and then drove out to Fire Island for a couple of nights by myself. Knowing that he was with people who loved him relieved me briefly of my hypervigilance. We had one short phone check-in on Saturday morning, and he sounded fine. I spent 2 days walking the long stretch of beach between Cherry Grove and the Pines, crisscrossing the boardwalks we had walked, passing the house where we had had our first night together. By this time, two more of the 6 roommates with whom he had shared that house were sick. AIDS was inescapable. I was reminded of Mark at every turn. In the late afternoons, I sat at the bar in the Monster, drinking beer, simply trying to allow my central nervous system to calm down. It was a relief to be alone and to zone out. I felt like a soldier on furlough from the front. When Mark arrived in Cherry Grove on Sunday, he was ashen and short of breath. As near as I could put together, he was responding to what had happened in Boston in the few days we'd been gone. His friends and the People with AIDS group were under siege. Pedro Martinez had died the day we left. David Tiffany remained in a coma, and Richard was convinced that he would be next to make 3.
Mike, what was it like to be in the midst of all this suffering and death, focused so much on your community, the nation at large, not experiencing this, not taking it seriously, and joking about it in some cases, as I recall, and then seeing it as God's punishment in other instances?
It was brutal. I mean, the lack of... Mark was the 100th person in Boston or in Massachusetts to be diagnosed with AIDS. And so it was so new. And we were very fortunate to have Dr. Jerome Groopman. He had just moved to Boston from Los Angeles, where some of the first cases were found. And so the medical care was caring, if not informed, since nobody was informed. And the AIDS Action Committee was formed at the same time, and we were both very active in that. But the lack of general public consciousness, and especially the lack of government support, was heartbreaking.
Mark eventually passed away. His last words, you write, when he was still able to talk, were, "I'm not going to die." Why did you write this book? Was it an effort to make sure that Mark didn't die, ultimately?
God bless you for saying that. I've never thought of it that way. There's a scene at the very beginning of the book in the preface where I'm in the waiting room at the hospital when he's just been diagnosed, and I'm calling his parents to tell them. And I'm standing there, and the thought that keeps going through my mind is, nothing is ever going to be the same. And that scene stayed with me for 30 years after he died. And I retired 3 years ago, and I decided, well, now I can write that book. And I did. And it's a way, I feel, of keeping his story and our story alive long beyond our time here.
You write about feeling survivor's guilt. Why did they die and you didn't?
Yes. And I think that's a very common feeling. I don't feel like I behaved any differently than any of my many, many friends who died. And I don't understand why, but I do feel like I've written something that honors them and keeps their memories alive.
Mark, you mentioned was a sailor. I wanted to be a boat captain. The title of your book, The Sea is Quiet Tonight.
Yes.
Can you connect that up for us?
Sure. There's a scene where we're sailing before he's sick, where we visit a gravesite that was just off the side of the road in Bar Harbor, Maine. And it was obviously a sailor's site. And the line, "The sea is quiet tonight," was on that gravestone. And we both loved it. We thought it was so beautiful for a sailor to have that as the line on his epitaph. And so when Mark died, I had that engraved on his gravestone.
Now, you're speaking, as we mentioned, in Milwaukee and Madison. Do you have the event details handy so people can check that out?
Yes. Tonight, I'm reading at Outwards Bookstore at 7 p.m. And tomorrow night in Madison, I'm reading at A Room of One's Own at 6 p.m.
And can you leave us with a message to people struggling? All of us are going to go through it sometime. People struggling with the slow passing of a loved one.
Yes. Keep your heart open and remember to breathe. I did a lot of meditation during those years, and I still do. And coming back to the breath always grounds me.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
That's Michael Ward. He's a retired psychotherapist. We've been talking about his memoir. It's called The Sea is Quiet Tonight. Chronicles losing his partner Mark to AIDS in the early 1980s. Again, he'll be speaking in Milwaukee tonight at 7 at Outwards Books, Madison tomorrow at A Room of One's Own. That's at 6 p.m. tomorrow in Madison.